This is our legal expert, Jeff O'Brien. He's a well-recognized attorney from Lohmann Abdo in such areas as business law, commercial contract disputes, intellectual property, and more. He also knows his sports and can lend his expertise when there are legal issues at play. This is Dave Harrigan, a well-recognized producer and update host from the Mackey and Judd Show. He's not really an expert in anything, but here he is to introduce the topics to Jeff and then nod in agreement every time Mr. O'Brien makes a great point. Welcome to Case in Point with Jeff O'Brien. Here's Dave Harrigan.
All right, here we go. Time for another episode. My name's Dave. That's Jeff. And, I'll more than just throw out the topics, I'll also ask you, please, give us a rating on iTunes, if you would. 5 stars for this episode, because I know it's going to be fantastic, because it's not just me and Jeff. We've got Brooks Bollinger back with us this week, former NFL quarterback, former Viking, of course, and who better to bring in, Jeff, to talk about deflated footballs than a guy who knows a little bit something about throwing footballs, be they deflated or overinflated. I don't know. I don't want to throw any accusations out there. But thanks for joining us, Brooks. And, Jeff, I'll throw it to you right away. Where do you want to start with this thing?
Thanks, Dave.
My God, there's a lot.
I know. And thanks, Dave. And Brooks, thanks for joining us. It's good to have our quarterback in residence back in the studio with us. You know, the reason I want to kind of discuss this one, you know, we've come to the end now of what we know as Deflategate. You know, Tom Brady has decided to take his medicine. He's accepted that the Court of Appeals upheld or overturned throwing out his suspension. He will be out for the first 4 games of the 2016 season.
Mm-hmm.
And it really has been, I think, in terms of legal dramas in the sports world, this one was one of the more bizarre in terms of what the underlying violations were, what, you know, the investigation that ensued, the commissioner's role in all of this. And then we'll talk to some practical stuff for listeners who may be negotiating contracts that have clauses in them about choice of law and which court hears any dispute over the contract, or if you're an individual or a business owner that maybe contemplating litigation over a matter about what courts may be available to you. So we'll talk about that as well, because there is actually a Minnesota angle to this whole Deflategate thing. But let's talk first, Dave, about the facts of this and what exactly is Deflategate. And this rises, of course, out of the 2015 AFC Championship game where the Patriots spanked the Indianapolis Colts 45-7. And as the story goes, I think it was DeQuell Jackson intercepted Tom Brady just before halftime. And there had been kind of whispers over a period of time that the Patriots may be messing around with the air pressure in the football, possibly mm-hmm. deflating it to give Mr. Brady an advantage in throwing it. And we're going to talk to Brooks here a little bit later about the advantages, what possible advantages that could bring. And supposedly, as the story goes, Jackson handed off the ball and somebody had an official test it, and it came out 2 pounds per square inch below the NFL's prescribed weight of the inflation of the football. Of course, anything involving a possible scandal and the New England Patriots, the media, thrives on it. And so the NFL tapped a gentleman, an attorney by the name of Ted Wells, to investigate these allegations. He came out with a very detailed report, said that it was more probable than not that the Patriots had been engaged in some sort of shenanigans involving deflating the footballs mm-hmm. For a competitive advantage. And they also said that it was more probable than not that Tom Brady was aware of what they were doing. And on May 11th of 2015, the league announced a 4-game suspension for Tom for his part in the scandal. And, you know, we've talked, Dave, on Mackey and Judd show before about this issue. I think we talked about it when the overturn of the suspension was announced, and the suspension was reinstated, shall we say. And we talked about it then. I said, this is almost like a Watergate style a punishment where it wasn't so much the underlying violation, but the cover up of the violation,
the non-cooperation
that that led to Tom Brady being punished here. And, as part of the, when it was the suspension was announced, the Troy Vincent, who's the NFL's executive VP of football operations, sent a letter to Tom Brady. And I want to read a couple quotes out of it because it really goes to the heart of that point. It says, "Your actions as set forth in the report clearly constitute conduct detrimental to the integrity of and public confidence in the game of professional football. With respect to your particular involvement, the report established that there is substantial and credible evidence to conclude you were at least generally aware of the actions of the Patriots employees involved in the deflation of the footballs and that it was unlikely that their actions were done without your knowledge. Moreover," and this is the important part, "the report documents your failure to cooperate fully and candidly with the investigation, including by refusing to produce any relevant electronic evidence, emails, texts, etc., despite being offered extraordinary safeguards by the investigators to protect unrelated personal information, and providing testimony that the report concludes was not plausible and contradicted by other evidence." So very clearly, Tom Brady was punished here for failing to cooperate with an investigation. When there are these issues that come up where the NFL does investigate, they do have the authority to conduct those investigations. They determined here that Tom Brady did not cooperate. This is an ongoing push-pull, again, with the Players Association and the commissioner's office as to the level of authority that this commissioner has exercised over this investigation process. There's, I think, some that believe that the commissioner is very much a partisan of the owners and has been overly harsh when it comes to player discipline. Mm-hmm. I don't know, Brooks, if you have any thoughts on that, but...
Well, I think the interesting thing, and the thing we might never know the answer to, is not only how much was he punished more for the cover-up than the crime, but also how much was he punished for past cover-ups or cover-ups we don't even know about or lack of cooperation by Belichick or Kraft or the Patriots from various earlier purported scandals. I think
that's a very good point. And I think that the commissioner, in my opinion, that's exactly the case what happened here. We'll talk here shortly about the underlying violation, but this just seemed like a very harsh overreaction. And possibly brought on by exactly what Brooks said, is the commissioner sometimes is criticized for being, partisan to the owners. But in particular, he does have a very good relationship with Robert Kraft. And there have been some that said it's because of his very tight relationship with Robert Kraft where the Patriots may have faced less harsh punishments for the Spygate scandal and some other things that they may have been involved with in the past. And this is almost like, if you remember, Dave, from a few episodes ago when we talked about OJ and how he got nailed on a kidnapping and robbery charge. And some people see that as almost the,
retribution
how much of the previous murder case played into, that whole saga. Same thing here. How much did the criticism of the commissioner for maybe not taking as harsh of action or swift of action against the Patriots on Spygate, did this play into the commissioner deciding, I'm going to make a point here that I'm not, I can be impartial towards the Patriots.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what happened here.
Let's talk about the crime itself, per se. We'll call it a crime, I guess. At least in the NFL's eyes, it was. The actual deflation of the footballs. I want Brooks's opinion. When you first heard the story, is it common in the league for quarterbacks to be a little bit past the rules when it comes to, manipulating the footballs, doctoring them up for what they want for game day, whether it be deflating or inflating or whatever they do? And just when you heard it, what were your initial thoughts? I mean, was it, this is hogwash, or, yeah, he probably did it?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, first thing I want to make clear is I'm not, in no way comparing myself to Tom Brady.
I am. You're both right-handed, right?
Yeah.
Hey, so am
I. But at the time, I didn't even know there was a specific PSI or number that it had to be at. Equipment guys, I think, handle that. Certainly it's common practice that the quarterbacks day before the game sit down with a room full of balls and you pick the ones that kind of fit your eye, per se. And there's no doubt in my mind that, a little air out of the ball helps you control a little better. Just think of a guy not only throwing the football, but carrying the football, right? If you have this Think of Tony Romo a couple years ago with the kicking balls, right? Those big, hard, glossy things that haven't been wiped down, catching the extra point, right? And it slips right through his hands. Same difference, right? If you get hit and you're carrying this big, hard, firm thing, the harder it is going to be to hold on to.
Yeah, you can squeeze into it a little bit, yep. Get the fingers
so
in.
It just gives you a little better control, just a little bit, right? And then I think the question becomes, where does the line get drawn between gamesmanship, kind of part of the game, and a crime, per se, like we're talking about today? And certainly the Patriots are known, and I think to a certain extent proven, both outside the league and within the league, that they're going to push the boundaries of quote-unquote gamesmanship and kind of leaving no stone unturned as to find a competitive advantage in any possible way they can. I think they did that here. I think he knowingly did it. And the question is, how much of an advantage is it? I think it's a small advantage. Mm-hmm. I think it's a comfort level for Tom Brady. Certainly it didn't affect him in the second half when they re-inflated him and what they unravel.
Yeah, I think it was 17-7 at halftime. And then when they reinflated the balls, the Patriots then proceeded to score 28 unanswered points.
Which is good. Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I guess the question of, you know, how much of an advantage is, obviously it's not a 38-point advantage, whatever, the 45-7, right?
Right,
yeah, that's,
right.
That's the difference there. That's the math. But, you know, in my mind, it's you can do worse things, but at the end of the day, it's still cheating.
Well, I think the point is, and this bugs me about the Patriots always, is it's the rule. And that you playing in the league, you follow the rules, right? It is a rule, at least within the teams, that the head coach goes out and players fulfill their media requests. Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes when the Patriots have a tough loss, Tom Brady doesn't show up for the media request. Bill Belichick, he decides to send an assistant out there. And the point is, yeah, you're upset when you lost. Everybody is, okay? It's the rule. You're not above the law. You're not above deciding which rules you follow and what you don't. So do I, if it was anybody else, I'd kind of say, hey, it's gamesmanship. It's what you're supposed to do. It's you're trying to, you know, win the football game. With the Patriots, it's kind of like throw the buck at them. They're doing it in every nook and cranny and good. I'm biased.
How do you really feel, Bryce? Yeah.
You know, just for the record, the supposedly the official rule of the NFL in terms of the footballs, it has to be inflated to, it's the pressure has to be between 12.5 and 13.5 pounds per square inch. The rule apparently doesn't specify at what temperature that measurement is to be made. Mm-hmm. So in this case, it sounds like the measurement was, at least this the measurement of the ball in question that started this whole thing ended up being made on the sideline during a cold game. So we don't know if it was measured ahead of time in the locker room or, you know, inside and found to be of an appropriate pressure. But to Brooks's point about the, you know, the, it's the rule, and this goes, you know, we see this over and over again, and I'm glad you brought up about the media availability. Marshawn Lynch was a guy that was always, you know, kind of testing the commissioner's limits as in regards to that rule. You know, the NFL, the league, and the Players Association every several years negotiates a collective bargaining agreement. You know, the players have a union because we've got millionaires that have a limited number of employment opportunities provided by billionaires. So that's why there's a players union involved. And there's a collective bargaining agreement, just like, you know, the plumbers union or the electricians union or the teachers union. They have a CBA. And all of these things in terms of what the players' obligations are laid out in there. There is a process laid out there for discipline and for what happens if there is an investigation and cooperation. And that's all but goes back to the concept of due process, right? There's an agreement between both sides at the time these contracts are negotiated in terms of this is what's going to happen. These are the things that are going to be the rules. These are the violation, the penalties for violating the rules. And this is the process for getting to whether or not a violation occurred. And you get someone in this, and I think that's what it goes back to why Brady was punished here with a 4-game suspension, because he simply thumbed his nose at it. You know, I mean, the Patriots, are, in my opinion, have the same reputation. Remember, in the Oakland Raiders of the 1970s, it was just assumed that there was some shenanigans going on, Lester Hayes putting Stick'Em all over his jersey or something else, that, you know, there's certain teams, it's just like, well, they're going to win because, you know, they're going to do something, you know, untowards to win. So asterisk by that. Mm-hmm. I think that we've kind of just almost become numb to some of the the Patriots goings on.
Is that kind of what players in the league think, Brooks? I mean, do they hear Patriots and think, yeah, there's probably something fishy going on with that team?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been shown with some of the coaches that have left there, and it's just the way they operate, and it's, you know, to a certain extent, it's good coaching, right? I mean, they are very thorough in every single area of their organization, down to the tiniest of details, okay? But there's also areas where they're going to push the boundaries and they're going to cross the line, mm-hmm. okay? And I think they've earned that reputation. I don't think it's to the degree where they necessarily are saying, well, they win because they cheat, right? I think they win because of the other stuff. And the cheating is just kind of like, stop being jerks, right? Like, just why does it always have to get pushed over the line? And then why can't that line be drawn and have some respect for the other teams in the league, right? Sure. It's a small, tight league. And I think that's more of it. It's just, it's a little disrespectful to me, a little arrogant to look at your peers at that high of a level and to try and get away and do some of the stuff that they do, right? So I don't know that anybody looks at them as, oh, they're just dirty and cheap and they win because of it. I think they just look at them like, you know, I don't really like them because they're dirty and cheap, but they're damn good at what they do too.
You know, the interesting thing too is anytime we're talking about some sort of a violation involving the outcome of a major game that has occurred in the past, the question always becomes, it's always difficult, in my opinion, to mete out the appropriate punishment. And I go back to the Vikings and the Saints and Bounty Gate,
yeah,
where there was pretty clear evidence that, and there's one play in particular that Vikings fans and Saints fans and probably Packer fans, because they have to get in there too, will argue about forever, the high-low hit on Brett Favre, that where the Vikings were advancing towards what could have been a decisive go-ahead touchdown early on in that game. You know, the NFL is not the NCAA. They don't vacate titles. They never have. They never will. Mm-hmm. So the trick is always, well, what are they going to do? You're trying to punish a team in its future prospects for something that occurred, could have been a year, two, or three, or more in the past. And I think I do think that the league and the commissioner does need to be afforded some level of latitude and discretion when it comes to what is the appropriate punishment in those instances for violations like that.
Well, I think back to me, there's a difference, right? And this one, to me, the Flakegate is more of what they knew they could nail him for. But to me, that's a little bit more of gamesmanship, right? And sports has always been about that, right? The stick 'em and the grease under the hat and all those things. And it's cheating, and but there's always a little bit there where you're trying to just, that's part of the game, okay? And then there's the other stuff like stealing the video footage, illegal practices, hiding guys in IR, some stuff that's not only, I think, more detrimental to the outcome and providing an unfair advantage, but also unfair to the players and the people within their organization and the treatment of them. That is more concerning to me and more goes to the problematic stuff. Sure. I just see it as a representation of this was a way that they had their thumb on them now. And I couldn't get away from it.
Yeah, let's talk about the legal issues here. How it went through the legal process. I mean, this just wasn't between Brady and the league. This went through court after court after court, and some of it locally here, Jeff.
Yeah, what happens with these issues with player discipline under the collective bargaining agreement? There's a process where the matter is referred on to an arbitrator. The arbitrator makes a decision. You can appeal to the commissioner first. If the commissioner makes the decision, the commissioner upholds the arbitrator's decision, then we get back to due process concerns under the CBA, the player can appeal to a federal court. These matters are given the U.S. district courts in this are given jurisdiction over the matters involved with the collective bargaining agreement. And then beyond that, If you disagree with a district court opinion, the party that disagrees with it has a limited period of time where they can appeal to the Court of Appeals for that circuit. And then depending on what the Court of Appeals does, the party that is finds themselves on the losing end of that decision has the right to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has the discretion as to whether or not they want to accept that case and hear it and decide it. Here, Tom Brady decided in July that he was, even though he had the right to appeal the the overturning of the previous decision and the reinstatement of his suspension, that he had to upholding his suspension. I'm getting confused here between Adrian Peterson, where the Court of Appeals reinstated his suspension. So the Court of Appeals upheld his suspension, and he determined that he was not going to fight anymore. He was going to take his four-game suspension in 2016 and be done with this. He was not going to appeal it to the U.S. Supreme Court. I don't know what the calculation was in why he made that decision, but he just decided that that was the
kind of
move he was going to make.
General consensus that the Supreme Court probably wouldn't even bother hearing it, right?
Yeah, it's yeah. They said they are not required. Whether it be the U.S. Supreme Court or here in Minnesota, the state Supreme Court, they are not required to hear any case. They choose which cases they want to hear. They usually take cases that are kind of major points of law where they want to say something on it. In this case, they did. If they choose not to accept the case, then they essentially affirm the lower court's decision. But to your point about the Minnesota angle, the way this played out is once the commissioner upheld the arbitrator's award, the league moved quickly to file a suit in federal district court for the Southern District of New York to confirm the arbitration award. And that was a strategic move because immediately following that, or almost simultaneously, the Players Association filed a suit challenging the decision in the U.S. District Court here in Minnesota. Minnesota just has one judicial district. We don't have an east, west, north, south. We just have the one federal district. And the reason they did that is if anybody that's familiar with some of the cases that have played out over the years involving the NFL and its labor issues, a lot of those cases have been venued and heard here in the Minnesota U.S. District Court. Most of them under Judge David Doty. He's now a retired judge, but he heard a lot of those cases back in the day. He was a labor attorney in his private practice before he became a judge, and those cases have been trending in favor of a decision in favor of the player. So the Players Association made their own strategic move of filing an action in U.S. District Court, Minnesota, claiming that jurisdiction was proper there. The courts determined that it was that the jurisdiction was proper where the NFL had filed the case in New York, and moved the NFL PA suit to New York, which was seen to be a friendlier jurisdiction to the NFL, given that its headquarters is in New York. So it's a good practical point for listeners who are faced with a decision, whether it be in negotiating a contract that specifies, almost every business contract specifies, there's a clause that'll say governing law and venue. And it's the section that, lawyers, we always call them the boilerplate provisions at the very back of the contract. It usually says something about this, this contract will be governed by the laws of the state of fill in the blank. And the parties agreed that any actions involving any dispute under this agreement will be venued in the courts of, and you'll specify, well, if I'm doing a contract where I'm using Minnesota law, I'm going to specify that the governing law is the state of Minnesota, and any action is going to be venued in the state or federal courts for, if it's close to the Twin Cities, probably Minneapolis, Minnesota, because that's where, the main federal court is here, or it could be St. Paul. There's also a federal courthouse there as well. And so that's an important point out of this, is there are a couple different courts in this country. There are federal courts. There are state courts. In matters like this, the collective bargaining agreement mandates that these actions be heard in federal court. So we have what's called subject matter jurisdiction. Federal courts are limited jurisdiction. You have to have certain criteria in order to get into federal court. One of them is you have a provision like this in an agreement that specifies that federal it's to be heard in the U.S. district courts. But that's something to be decided. I mean, we have various counties in this state, depending on what's proper, where should you bring a lawsuit? Should you bring it in Minnesota? Should you bring it someplace else? Should you bring it in what county? There are all these rules about how you determine where to bring a lawsuit. So again, you know, if you're faced with that situation, if you're, whether you're negotiating an agreement or if you're dealing with where to file a lawsuit, of course, contact, be sure to be working with a lawyer that understands those venue and jurisdiction rules and those choice of law rules, and make sure that you have the appropriate choice either specified in the contract or made in terms of your lawsuit. Here there was, again, this was a strategic move on the NFL's part, and it paid off because everything was heard in the court in New York and then ultimately the Court of Appeals for that circuit, rather than being here in Minnesota and then going up to the Eighth Circuit, which, again, has typically, although we mentioned a minute ago with Adrian Peterson, they went and reinstated a suspension that was, you know, meted out 2 years ago.
Yeah.
They generally have a reputation of being pro player or players association, as opposed to being pro owners and commissioner.
Let's put on the judge jury hat before we wrap it up then. With everything that went down, I mean, you have science on both sides, scientists saying, yeah, you know, the deflation is absolutely possible just with the weather. Others saying, no, it's ridiculous. Clearly, they took air out of the football. Wells report saying Brady probably most likely knew. Where should we have ended in your mind? I'm of the opinion that he probably cheated. There's almost no doubt in my mind. Yes, there was some cheating. It's not the worst cheating you could do, but there was certainly punishment that should have been meted out. Four games, might be a little harsh, but you know what? Stick it to Patriots fans because they're annoying anyway. That's just fine with me. I like to see them squirm. Where are you guys at? Where should this have ended?
I tend to agree with you, Dave. I think that, and Brooks touched on it earlier, I think that the suspension meted out to Tom Brady is based in large part on his failure to cooperate with the investigation. And so there was sending a message to the players about following the rules and not hindering these investigations when they happen. And I do think, to the extent that four games might be harsh for the violation involved, I don't think in the grand scheme of things that the underlying violation really affected the outcome of the game. If they had done it in any other game, I don't know if it would have affected the outcome in those games.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this was, again, I think this was kind of a progressive punishment in reaction to previous allegations where there had been some finding of possible wrongdoing, and this was the chance where they had them dead to rights, and we're going to basically pound a nail with a sledgehammer and dole out a punishment that on its face seems excessive for a hindering an investigation over a seemingly minor rules violation. I think it was a reaction to prior investigations, prior violations that the Patriots had.
Sure. Brooks?
Totally agree. I think, you know, it's just that continuous history of them trying to push the envelope and find the competitive advantage in any way possible, and really being able to skate many times without getting in much trouble. My question is, had Tom Brady, accusation comes down and Tom Brady goes, sorry, I had no idea, or, yeah, my hands hurt, so I did it, my bad, what happens?
Yeah, I'm sure it's a light slap on the wrist, and we forget about it a week later, right?
That would have been some kind of a fine, and that was probably, that'd probably be about
and
it.
And we wouldn't be talking about it, and I think it goes to kind of a boiling point of the arrogance of the Patriots to go, we can skate this, and I think that's where they finally go, you know what, I think they might not be able to skate this one. Let's drill them. But looking back, you know, it's kind of like it.
Yeah, stick it to the Patriots, right? Yeah, I believe
victimless,
that.
Victimless punishment.
Yeah, right.
That's fine with me. All right, this is it. Case in point, episode 8. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Brooks, for coming by today, for helping us out.
Thank you, Dave, and thank you, Brooks, for joining us again.
Yeah, as you guys know, you can always find us, 1500ESPN.com, Podcast 1, iTunes, of course. Give us that iTunes rating, I should say, and we would appreciate it. And we'll catch you again next time, episode 9 coming up.